And it's been quite a week for CNN senior international correspondent Clarissa Ward. She and a small crew recently filmed in rebel-held Syria, and her powerful reporting has been airing on the network all week.
Arriving on the scene, our team found chaos and carnage. Volunteers shouted for an ambulance as they tried to ferry out the wounded. For many, it was too late. A woman lay dead on the ground, a jacket draped over her, an attempt to preserve her dignity.
Clarissa Ward has been to Syria more than a dozen times since the civil war began 5 years ago this week, first for CBS, now for CNN, more than any other Western television reporter. And she joins us from our NPR studios in New York with her reporter's notebook. Clarissa Ward, welcome and welcome home.
Thank you so much, Robin. It's great to be home.
We want to talk about this incredible reporting. That sound that we just heard was after an airstrike in a fruit market. You know, most people would run in the other direction. Your crew raced to see the aftermath. I want to ask you about that. But we looked up yesterday and saw you sitting on CNN with Wolf Blitzer talking with Admiral Kirby, who is the spokesperson for the Department of State. Having seen what you've seen, what are the questions that you have?
Well, the questions that I had are really the questions that every single Syrian who I spoke to who is living in these rebel-held areas, which have been subjected to relentless bombardment for 5 years now and even more intensive bombardment in the last 6 months since Russia began its military intervention. And the question I hear over and over again is, why hasn't the U.S. done more to help us? And why hasn't the U.S. done more to stop Russia from carrying out these types of attacks?
Well, and as you know, earlier this week, in fact, the same day that your reporting began airing on CNN, Vladimir Putin announced that the airstrikes from Russia in Syria, which he claims were against ISIS, would be stopped. Some people thought there might be a connection between him seeing your reporting and making that announcement. But what did you see on the ground? Did you see Russian aircraft striking these, in that case, a civilian fruit market?
Well, let's just say we know that there are two players in the skies in this particular area. You have the Air Force of the regime of Bashar al-Assad, and then you have the Russian Air Force. Now, I have been witnessing the regime bombardment for many years. It's typically been quite crude. You're looking at homemade barrel bombs being dumped out of the back of helicopters. With the Russian involvement, I would say there is evidence of a much heavier, much more sophisticated type of weaponry being used. I saw courthouses and hospitals that had sort of literally they pancaked onto each other. In addition, if you look at a report from 2015, Doctors Without Borders, which looked specifically at the issue of medical facilities being targeted in rebel held areas, they found that 82 medical facilities were hit over 2015. And when you look at the breakdown of every month, there's a massive spike in the month of October, which is just after the Russian military intervention began. We have put this to the Russian Ministry of Defense. They have repeatedly said, we don't target civilian infrastructure. We've never killed civilians. But I can tell you, Robin, there is absolutely no ISIS presence in any of the areas in which I spent time. So something doesn't add up.
Well, and let's remind people, the rebels in the rebel-held towns that you met have been for years trying to take down Bashar Assad's regime. ISIS is also fighting Bashar Assad, but is no friend to the rebels, has on occasion attacked the rebels. Russia says it's attacking ISIS, but Russia backs Bashar Assad. And so the thinking is that the Russian airstrikes have been against the rebels who are fighting Assad. It's a complicated mix. But what was the answer that you got as to why the U.S. hasn't done more?
Well, the answer that Admiral Kirby gave, and I think there's some real legitimacy to this, is that the U.S. has been pushing extremely aggressively, diplomatically, to try to get Russia to play a productive role, both in bringing the Assad regime to the negotiating table in Geneva. I also think there's some degree of optimism that the announcement we heard earlier this week, which I would love to be able to connect to my reporting in any way, but sadly, I think that's probably not the case. But so I think there's some optimism as well there that this announcement of a withdrawal could bring about some improvement in the situation. And he also pointed out that the situation on the ground has been considerably better since the cessation of hostilities began 2.5 weeks ago. And I was there both before and during the beginning of the cessation of hostilities. And while there were still airstrikes, even while I was there at the very beginning of the ceasefire, there's no question that it was a drastic reduction than what we were hearing in the first few days, which was pretty intense.
We'll talk about being there. Bodies are strewn, the images that we see. You were covered pretty much head to toe in a hijab and a habaya to sort of hide your appearance. Your camera crew, incredibly brave with you. But you're watching this devastation. I mean, you met a 70-year-old woman who lost, you know, so many family members, a surgeon whose hospital is the only one left standing in one town. Tell us a little bit more about what you saw.
What was so shocking to me was just how quickly you realized what hell the Syrian people have been living through now for 5 years, and how that hell became even worse when the Russian military intervention began in September of last year. We were on the ground for less than 24 hours before we heard fighter jets buzzing overhead. And I can tell you from experience that there is a sickening pit that forms in your stomach when you hear the sound of those fighter jets, because you know that bombs are soon going to fall, but you don't know where exactly they're going to fall. And you don't know what you can do to try to protect yourself. You have this acute sense of being so small and so vulnerable and so powerless. And in this case, the bombs fell on a fruit market. Mm. And when we arrived at the hospital, the one thing that will never leave me was this young boy who was brought in with a bandage around his head, and you could hear him moaning as they brought him in on the stretcher. And then moments later, the doctors told our team that he had died. And it's just so difficult to try to understand how, first of all, how people have the strength and the steadfastness and the courage to remain in these areas when they know the risks, when they know the horror, when they've experienced the trauma. And yet we did come across doctors like Dr. Firas Al-Jundi, who has been attacked many times, has witnessed unspeakable horrors, and yet actively chooses to remain inside Syria to risk life and limb to keep doing this work. And the way he described it, which again just really resonated with me, you know, I said the Russians are saying, and the regime has constantly said, that they're targeting terrorists. And he said, it's not an attack on terrorists. It's an attack on everyday life. And there's a subliminal message, you know, you go to the hospital to get your heart checked out, you could be killed. Go to the courthouse to try to settle a dispute, you could be killed. Go to the fruit market to try to buy some oranges, you could be killed. And the impact that sort of psychological warfare has on a community is really, really profound.
I can't imagine, having seen all of that, and we've just glimpsed some of the footage that you and your crew got, I mean, it just looks like a vast wasteland. What is your sense of Syria, you know, standing up again?
It's really hard for me to imagine how Syria could once again be a single contiguous state, multi-ethnic, multi-sectarian. The fabric of Syrian society has been ripped apart. And while you still see pockets of the Syrian spirit and the Syrian hospitality and the Syrian grace and humor that those of us who have spent time there have come to know and love, you also see a bitterness and a brutality and a cynicism that have naturally crept in as a result of many, many years of conflict. And you also see the growing sway of more radical militant groups on the ground. The rebel-held areas that we were traveling in have a strong presence of Jabhat al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda's affiliate. And it's so funny because it's a really conflicted relationship that most people have with groups like Jabhat al-Nusra. the Syrian people feel that when they needed the world most, the world abandoned them. And it was these more militant Islamist factions who the Syrians didn't necessarily care for, but they were the ones sort of holding out their hand. And I think many Syrian people, perhaps rather naively at the time, thought that they could take that hand and exploit the help that these factions were able to give and then get rid of them whenever it would be necessary. The reality now is, with so many millions of people having fled the country, it's those on the ground who are fighting and dying who now think that they should have the ultimate say in how the future of Syria turns out.
And by the way, Jabhat al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda affiliate, might also protect them from ISIS. So it just gets more and more complicated.
Exactly.
Yeah. Clarissa Ward, senior international correspondent for CNN on her recent visit to Syria. Clarissa, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.